This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. Morning, Doc. Good to have you back in the studio again. I see you've got a new mask on again today. You've been overwhelmed with your social responsibility in the last couple of weeks.
You've got to try your best, Gordon. And I see you've got a very fancy Hawaiian shirt on today.
It's bring on summer. You know, only reason I'm not wearing sunglasses in the studio is because I can't see the screen. So otherwise, I'd be going for summer. Yeah, I know. I've had enough. I want summer now.
Yeah.
Proper summer, that is, not just on a calendar, but sun, actual sun. All right. But what we do have with us in a rare and exciting turn of events is another human being in the studio with us. We've got Corinne Duchesne, who is the Chief Growth Officer for Kantar, Africa and Middle East. And great to have you here. We get excited when we get real people in studio instead of Zooming. Not that well done, Zoom. We love what you've done for the world. But Corinne, thanks for coming in this morning.
Great to be here today, Gordon. And as a data person, I must just point out that the weather does not show that your summer's coming.
It's summer when you wear a summer shirt. That's how it works. Floral shirts will bring on the sun. That's important. But talking about bringing on new and exciting things, Corinne, I mean, you tweeted the other day about something which I didn't understand at all. Mm. So I've had, through the benefit of search, automatic content recognition, ACR is what you were talking about and how it's going to revolutionize the world. Content recognition, not to be confused with remembering the names of actors that you see on screen or television. That's not content recognition. That's just sound memory. Okay. What on earth is automatic content recognition and why is it going to change our world in advertising?
Absolutely. Yeah, so I think, as the tweet pointed out, this is a big area of growth across the world. And the reason for that is the huge switch that we're seeing from the old-fashioned ways of watching, listening, consuming media in a linear way to the non-linear way. That is, we watch it when we want to, where we want to, how we want to. And the content recognition allows us to be able to measure that, identify that, and to really get to the bottom of what people want, when they want it, and to learn from that so we can improve our media effectiveness.
So as a research group, and Kantar, obviously one of the biggest research groups in the world, how do you get involved with this? I mean, for me, that sounds like digital, you know, sort of fingerprinting and artificial intelligence. But how do real people get involved with that? Or are you moving into the Microsoft Google tracking arena?
Well, I'd say that the real person content recognition that we all know is Shazam, which is when we're at a party. We hear a piece of music we love. We quickly Shazam it to put it to our playlist. That is content recognition. it does an audio match with a database of it's a huge database of all music, and it identifies that this is this song by this artist. That's the most simplest form of content recognition that I can describe. But as a research company, as an insights agency, the reason it's important to us is we need to be able to measure what media is being consumed so that advertisers can find out which one's giving them the ROI they want. And in the olden days, we used to just put a little machine onto the TV and we'd look at what people do, or we'd ask people what they listen to on the radio, and that was all fine. But in the current day, some of us are listening, we're tweeting, we are doing whatever, and we need new methods to be able to identify what people are doing. And that's where automatic content recognition comes along.
Doc, I mean, you've always been strong on information-based kind of insights to drive marketing decisions. Are you a fan of digital fingerprinting, or are you a clipboard and out in the bush Q&A kind of guy? Yeah, or is it a bit of both?
Yeah, I think, Gordon, I mean, if you look at, you know, over time, I guess, you know, and one's got to move with the times. And you know, Corin, firstly, welcome from my side, and thanks for your time to share with us. I think, I want to say change has been around with us forever and will be, Gordon, but certainly the last year, the world has been shaken up, you know what I mean? And across all platforms, you know, in terms of media consumption, and I know, Corin, we're going to chat about your trend and your new report and trends analysis. And I mean, one of the lead-in, to answer your question very quickly, Gordon, is certainly I've moved with the times as well, you know, in terms of understanding new ways of tracking. We've spent a lot of time on the show over the last year chatting about digital, whether it's an integrated service or the old school, whether it was a separate silo thing. And I think we've all agreed that that's very old school thinking. Digital is part of mainstream, and we've spoken to some big brand owners and media houses. So the tracking tools have to go with it, and marketers, as we've always said, have to educate themselves and stay on top and work with not just Kantar, but Kantar-like companies who have got great insights. And what I used to not enjoy is data for the sake of data. You know, I'm not a big fan of that. I've never been a big fan of that. I've been a big fan of telling me what it is. And if I want to delve into your methodology, your geographics, all of that stuff, I'll get to it. What are my takeouts as a marketer? What do I need to know? But I must trust the source. I must know that you are telling me something. And if you're telling me that today it's content recognition, I must know that you, Kantar, have got the resource and the backing to buy in, because I don't have time to go and do a trust audit on my partners. I do that up front. Once I've got the info, then it's a question of how do I use the info. And I want to say I was lazy, but I like that good exec summary, and I hate a bad presentation. You know, I can't have researchers come in and waffle. So you got to land it quickly and tell me what I need to know, and then I'll use it from there. But I mean, yeah, Corin, so I'd love to chat about, and I know Gordon's got a few questions on in terms of your new trend report, specifically around this crazy world of last year and into this year.
Yeah, we'll get there in a moment, but you were nodding your head sagely and enthusiastically while the doc was speaking, so...
Yeah, well, I need to talk fast and be very succinct and to the point. Otherwise, I'm going to get labeled with that stereotype.
Waffling was the word he used. Waffling. I wrote it down. Waffling.
Of the researcher. But, you know, the new tools are really – they empower the media planners to really know which part of their content is working much better. So some of the most common tools in ACR are to use things like digital fingerprinting, to do audio matching, and – we use, there's a number of tools. You can use an app where you just, it downloads an app and it just listens to everything that's happening. And when I say listen, it's not necessarily physical listening. It picks up an embedded digital watermark, which is put out by the broadcaster. So then the broadcaster can know, was this done, was this watched or listened to on satellite? Was it listened to on a streaming service? Was this listened to on a phone? Was it listened to on an iPad? Was it on a computer? And the tools itself, because each time you listen to it, it's got a different sort of embedded digital fingerprint that allows you to understand which part of your content plan is working. And then if you know that it's gone more mobile, how do you change what you're doing to suit the small screen? Or if it's, you know, it's a second screen activity, how do you make sure that what you're putting in your ads talks to what's going on the television, so that the online and the linear are going together? So it's all the evolution of how we do things, and that's why we need the data.
Yeah, I mean, in your digital report, or your trend report rather, for 2021, you talk about creative context and realizing anew that where ads appear is just as important as what is said in the ad. And I've been a great advocate of context, well, since day one, because that's what I was taught. You know, it's not just about the size of the audience. But taking a step back, one of the concerns a lot of people have, you know, that this kind of implies artificial intelligence. And I'm mindful of a phrase one of our previous guests, Oresti Patricios, used from, you know, from Ornico, that he doesn't like artificial intelligence. He prefers augmented intelligence for AI, which makes sense to me. There's a role for human beings. So a lot of this for me is suggestive that I still need to do my planning anyway up front. This moves into the kind of the marvelous area of adjusting campaigns on the fly. In the past, in your previous incarnation, you know, as a research agency, we'd run a TV campaign, we'd wait a month, then you would come back with what was impact information, and you know, if you're lucky, you could adjust the campaign for your next burst 7 months later. But this is all about adjusting it on the fly.
Absolutely, and if you have to wait for a month now, we should be fired. So yes, we've moved into automating. So I prefer the word machine learning than artificial intelligence, because it's picking up on patterns, it's looking for the things that normally happen, and it's automating those. So it's looking for exceptions and it's finding real data that's happening. And we've used a lot of that intelligence to build into our tools to be able to overnight test and compare with past ads, and how does this stack up with, in terms of its impact, in terms of the creative, and its effectiveness. And I think that why would you use the old-fashioned things when there's something that's more effective and faster and enables us to do it? But if you don't use your brain, you are going to miss the boat. So you still need that gut feel, understanding of your consumer. You need to know who you're targeting. You need to know what's their context. How's it changed over this past year? Because I don't think there's any one of us that has not got to change context over the past year.
Yeah. And I think, sorry, Gordon, thanks, Gordon. I think absolutely right. And I mean, one of the things, there's certain basics that stay in place. You know what I mean? Whether it's 2021, 2022, 2023, the basic premise of marketing is that you're trying to create or meet a need and to keep and nurture a customer. And then it's the tools, you know. And if you as a modern day marketer are not a fan and not familiar with those tools, well, then you're going to get found out, or your organization will suffer. So I think those are probably some obvious points that I'm trying to make there. Just let's talk a little bit about last year and your trends report that's come out now in terms of the changing consumer. Just some highlights from that. And what are the things to be looking out for that you would pick up as the changed consumer for the future?
Yeah. So I think there's no facet of human life that has really stayed the same. So as the fundamental as a marketer, getting in touch and staying close to the ground on how your consumer has adapted. What are the things that they like about this new world that they're going to stick with? What are the things that they can't wait to get back to the old normal? And as such, which choices do we make when we're going to place our media to fit with the new context? I think those are the things we need to get in touch. And we do the annual trends report every December just to set out a plan for the year of things as marketers we need to think about. And the three kind of areas we focused on in that particular report is what parts of people's lives have changed or pivoted. Who are the people and where are they now? How do we meet them in a different way? And how are we going to use data and analytics to just be more effective in what we do? We have to improve our ROIs, because without fail, our research, we've interviewed in a separate piece of work, we've interviewed over 400 marketing CEOs and MDs about their plans for the next 6 to 12 months. And they're all saying budgets are under pressure, so they need to see the outcomes that they're looking for.
Yeah, budgets under pressure. It's interesting that if we look at the reports coming out of WARC, World Advertising Research Council, most budgets are returning to normal, i.e. where they were at the back end of 2019. There's kind of a leveling out right across the board, and in some cases even growing. And there's been a resurgence of interest in television, for instance, as a medium within the social media mix, which is really very, very interesting. If I go back, one of the dynamics that you know, impact information absorbed into your bigger family pioneered in this country was the concept of liking.
Yeah.
And, you know, Charles Foster in those days even wrote a paper which
Correct.
Was in the site, you know, which if you know Charles, he will tell you is that his only paper he ever had published, I think. But he's very proud of it. But and I still use it because it's brilliant. And the paper was called An AR Is Not an AR. And he could show clearly that if your commercial was liked, you could flight it less. The savings were huge. Mm. So do you still track things like liking one? And then the next question is what we have discovered last year in 2020, that trust is a key factor. Are you tracking liking and trust? And how do you put the two together?
Yeah. So if we start with the first point about liking, I think let's think about it as human connection. When you touch that emotional heartstring of someone, it just breaks through the clutter. And we see without fail across ad test upon ad test, feedback across feedback, that creative impact and having that emotional response is the thing that has more impact on your media effectiveness than anything else. Not your channel, not your time, not your place. Just having really great creative and impacting people so that they like it. And our most popular event of the year at Kantar in South Africa is the best liked ads. And that is because we can really see that those ads that just get to the top, they break through the clutter. Those ones resonate. They touch people at that human level. And every time a coconut, if you watch those ads, you will see what it is. It's a dimension that's human. And I think in the current day, humanity is one of the things we all need to look at. Do you want me to go into the trust point?
Yeah, go for it, yeah.
Okay. So absolutely, the way we are consuming media has changed. And trust is probably at an all-time low in terms of big companies, organizations, media, etc., because of the amount of fake news. People are more likely to trust their friends and family than they are to trust any kind of broadcast medium out there. So I think we need to have that context in mind when we're thinking about things and how are we going to make sure that our authenticity comes through, that we're trustworthy. And there's a lot more pressure on media owners to get rid of fake content, to eliminate the people. We've seen what happened here with the Bell Pottinger situation. We've seen what happened with the election stuff in the US. We have to recognize that this is a changing thing that has to be taken into account. And the way we track that in terms of brands, this is one of our dimensions on our Brand Z index, is brand trust and brand authenticity. And when people, a brand is a signature of trust, right? So if you're true to yourself, the way you execute your creative, you are in the right kind of context because you've understood your consumer, that becomes an even stronger beacon of trust. And the great brands are just growing and growing and growing in terms of value.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Yeah, Corin, I think, you know, Gordon, just one of the things with brand trust, and it's not just now, it's brand delivery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've worked on some good pieces of work where I'd like to think we delivered on what we said. And I've unfortunately worked on pieces of work where, for whatever reason, the system didn't work, the product didn't do exactly. You know what I mean? From the basic thing of buy now, and you and I have spoken at length about, say, a Black Friday type event where you know you don't have the stock, you've had 10 items, and you've got in small print, but you want to get people in, whether I say in online or in your store in historic times. And I think that's the kind of thing that just irritates people because it breaks down brand trust all the way through to, you know, some massive of emotional campaigns, but I sometimes like it, but I battle to see the follow-up, and I look for the follow-up, and I say to myself, I wonder when they're going to try to sell me something, and if they're going to, because they're all in the business of selling me something. It's just how they sell it, and whether when at the point of sale, in other words, their follow-up piece, their product and retail piece is as engaging, and do I like it as much as their big brand emotional piece. So it's quite interesting how you look at degrees of trust through that value chain. And then, of course, you know, and I mean, I haven't, I guess, later on in my career, probably got better at this. But initially, I thought marketing was only for the consumer. So I'd spend all my time and all my effort on just consumer-facing marketing. But I didn't realize, well, I probably did realize, but for whatever reason didn't do it. The people who deliver the marketing is not the marketing team. Mm. It's the cashier. Mm. It's the person that, you know,
it's
the
experience.
It's the UX designer in modern day times. So how does that person buy into that big piece of emotive brand work, and how do they foster trust? It's no use me sitting saying, geez, I've got a great piece of work. So yeah, it's multifaceted. And again, you know, Corin, I mean, I guess big brands know that or should know that and work through trust and make sure that the consumer, the takeout is something in a world of you know, fake news and all the other stuff you've spoken about.
So maybe just to take a step back to that, you said big emotive brand campaign. when I'm talking about emotional connection, it doesn't have to be the big emotive, you know, song and dance, beautiful piece of film, as some people would sometimes call it. It's about connecting in a relevant way with the consumer you're trying to sell to. And it's touching that. And if I look at some of the ads that did really well last year, they were very real and very relevant and very true to what people needed then and there. And it's just the way you do it. And if you understand your consumer and where they're at, you will get that connection. So on that point,
just can you remember, you know, one or two of the top ones? It'd be interesting. Maybe we can try and put a link in here when we publish. Do you remember who was top dog? No.
There was many, and actually, I mean, some of them were the likes of school shoe ads, which not about school shoes themselves, but it's how does that mother feel? It's yes. Just the whole when you really understand that human being context and you bring it away in a relative and creative way, it connects with people.
I must say, I tend to agree with you on one thing. I mean, I've watched those liked ads and I've used them in media training workshops a lot over the years. You've been very kind over the years to share those with me because it just helps to illustrate. But one thing always struck me is exactly what you said. It wasn't the high production value things. It's just sometimes the most simple. And what shocked me was how often retail ads performed well in that, not just
yes,
brand.
Retail,
you
know,
you think
very, very
kind of
well.
Retail, you forget that retail can be creative as well. Yeah. It's not just brand and price. So,
and I actually think retail in South Africa responded to this crisis phenomenally. Mm. Look at the success of Checkers 6060. Mm. Look at these new apps, the Bottles app, Pick and Pay, the way they came together. There's so many retailers have really responded to what people need and what they want. But just returning to other brands that have done really well, the brand that saw the single most growth in sales in 2020 across the world is what? I want you to guess. A consumer brand.
Around the world. Most
everywhere. South Africa, the world. Everywhere. It's obviously a global brand.
I don't even know where to start. I was going to say, well, I'm spending a lot of time at home, so I want to be good and clean and fresh. I'm going to say toothpaste.
You're in the right sort of realm, but the brand that we saw across our world panel measurement is Dettol.
It grew
in stature across the world. And in South Africa, that ad really spoke to people because it was a time when people needed more information and they wanted to know what to do. This really kick-started the sales. And, you know, Dettol had to respond and change the way they did their marketing because suddenly they were getting queries from hotel groups, from businesses.
Wow.
And they were like, okay, we don't even have a professional services business. Let's figure this out. And they did so well on responding to that consumer need, and they saw the sales coming through the roof.
Yeah, but I guess it's that thing about, again, you know, get back to degrees of what are you selling? You know, are you just selling the product, or are you selling what the product does or the service does for you? And again, you know, through the years, Gordon, we've worked on brands. We continue to work with brands where some people have a very narrow view of what they're doing, and some other people have a far more uplifting, not even category uplifting, life uplifting view. So if you look at Dettol, which I didn't know the answer to that, but I mean, they're obviously selling something. I understand the product, but it's not that. It's what it does. And in last year, it's safety, it's security, it's health, it's hygiene, peace of mind. You know, all of those things that are brand attributes that are intrinsic. Now, I don't know the DNA of the Dettol brand, so I don't know whether I can only imagine they are pretty obvious ones, you know, if I've just rattled them off now without really thinking. But it's all of that stuff, you know. Yeah. You speak about the school shoes. The function is to put your foot into something that keeps you. But it's not that. It's the future. It's education. And I heard this expression from years ago. I worked for a guy, and he said, one of the things he always looked at is your shoes. He says, because sometimes it tells me where you've come from and where you're going to go. In his own way, you know. And so I would look at a dusty pair of shoes, polished shoes in the morning and dusty shoes in the afternoon, typically from a kid coming back from school. So it's not shoes. Yeah. It's the future.
I think it talks to the point that you were making, Gordon, about brand action.
Yeah.
And if you think about probably the second fastest growing brand in the world was Lifebuoy. And Unilever has been absolutely fastidious about being more purpose-led in the way that they deliver their marketing and their execution in terms of brands. And Lifebuoy, I don't know if you remember that ad, they said, we don't care what you wash with, but please wash. They just took a category perspective and said, you know what? What matters now is that we save lives, we wash. And they took a higher level, more purposeful action as a brand. And this really also showed off. And that was also one of – that was actually, I think, our number one ad that we got in March. That's
interesting. And that resonates a lot with your brand's top brand survey, where brand purpose, I think, has emerged as one of the core assets that brands have. And and I think in your trends going forward, brands in action was a specific trend for 2021, where what you're saying is the opportunities to succeed or fail are real. And while there's passion for a cause, and it may be strong, if brands are all talk and there's no action, you're going to go backwards. It's not just a case of it won't work. You will go backwards because you know we come back into that breach of trust thing.
Yeah, and if you've taken a bolder stance where you're actually going to stand for something that's going to impact people's lives and be more meaningful, then you need to follow through with that. And if I think about some of the things where some brands that have really had to take brave steps, the likes of Quaker Oats and Aunt Jemima having to look at the actual brand name.
Yeah.
Because when they understood how important Black Lives Matter is as a human issue, and they making a stand as a brand, they've had to actually look at their brand itself. And they're looking at how do they redress the things that are wrong about their brand name to respond to the consumer reaction that's happening in the market.
You're sharing vast amounts of information. Some of it is available. I know, obviously, the top line reports are available. The detailed reports are subscriber based. But how can our listeners get hold of you? Where can they find access to this kind of information? I've found it incredibly useful in day to day applications. It just gives you the reassurance when you're making a statement to a client that your observation is not some cowboy observation, it's part of a global trend. How can folks get hold of some of these reports?
We've really tried to make as much of the information that's not proprietary to a client available as industry knowledge. So we have a couple of ways that you can engage with. Obviously, our website, there's a lot of content available. That's www.cantor.com. And you can sign up for something that we call Roundup, which every week talks about what are the topics that are coming up? What are the webinars you can attend? They can be global, they can be local. And then locally, there is none other than our marketing director, Ilse Dinner, for keeping you up to date on what's happening and all things marketing. And she's got a very comprehensive content plan for the rest of the year. And if you just Google Ilse Dinner and find her on LinkedIn, she will put you in touch with everything that's happening. Yeah. We do have a way to sign up for our mailing list that invites you to all of those seminars and learning pieces over the year. And then we also publish on our news points, which are on Biz Community Red.
Yeah, I can attest to that from Ilse that I get invited to all sorts of things I would not normally be invited to. That's been one of the great things about this whole lockdown thing is I got to go to global conferences, which I wouldn't have ever got to before. So I've had quite a glorious year in terms of information, and long may that continue. Just bringing it back to one of the trends which you identify in the report, and I'm conscious now we're getting to wrap up time as well. E-commerce and brands' response to e-commerce and how they adapt to that is crucial. And linking that back to our starting point on automatic content recognition. I mean, that surely has got to be the end play. If you can recognize the content, you can recognize the individual, you can close out the transaction in one sealed piece of communication.
Yeah, so I think e-commerce, they say that e-commerce got a 5-year boost in lockdown.
Yeah.
That people that would never have shopped online were forced to shop online because they were afraid to go out. And we've seen a huge surge, actually, in what they call the centennial and the silver surfer commerce coming through.
Why are you looking at me when you said silver surfer? Discrimination, Doc, that's got to be eliminated.
And I think, you know, when you think about that, you know, we're used to managing a planogram in a store. But how are we managing our impact on an online site? How do we make sure that our choices are coming up first, that we are influencing the retailer to up the game in terms of our brand? And then also, why don't we own some of that ourselves so that we also offer direct to consumer channel? And, you know, the content recognition can identify pack, product, face, words, sounds, all of that stuff to get a closer targeting over time. And we've seen a big, especially from the multinationals, a big growth in direct to consumer channels. And you'll get brands that say, let's own hair, right? and how people walk cleanse and how they get their hair shiny and beautiful and not dry and all of the things that, and then you'll use those search terms to get you ultimately to the product, and then ideally you can then get people into an annuity relationship with you. So right now I go to the shop, I come back, I've got my product, but when I get there I might be influenced to buy something else. But if you've got me signed up that every month my brand of shampoo comes to your home, suddenly I'm in a long-term relationship with you that's more secure. And I think that's what direct-to-consumer does.
Yeah.
You know, the like the Dollar Shave Club and the likes. I certainly have my e-pet store where I buy my dog food. Very important part of my life for my doggy dogs.
Yeah.
But every month they say, like, I'll give you 20% off if you sign up for me to drop this off every month. I haven't actually done it because I like somehow I'm not sure if I want to give – I don't know how much the dogs eat and all of that stuff. But actually, I should just take the 20% discount and take a smaller pack. And then they're in a relationship with me. I never have to think about that decision again.
Yeah,
it becomes into file 13 and just cash in the bank.
I think absolutely. Now, I look at, you know, Karen, your earlier point around you spoke the 60-60 in bottles, and a lot of those, you know, Woolworths curbside pickup, macro lockers, you know, a lot of that stuff has been accelerated, as you say, because of the artificial nature of last year, but to the betterment of consumers. And I'm absolutely convinced that a lot of people will not go back to their old behavior because of real convenience, and it works. And I mean, again, I don't want to give the name of the person, but it's one of the finalists I'm judging Marketer of the Year. And in talking to this company about their integrated retail systems, really clever stuff, but like really high level stuff, in terms of getting to know the consumer, serving them exactly what they want, understanding the consumer patterns, the buying behavior. So it's absolutely tailored. So again, you know, I think people are getting smarter. Of course, there's always the issue of how invasive is it, and you've got to get your own personal mind past that point of saying, do you want to share info, how versus the convenience and the upside benefit of that. The second point I just wanted to make, Gordon, you made the point of literally traveling the world on your computer this year, as a lot of us have, and again, you know, as we've always said to our listeners, this is very much not a conversation just between three of us today, although it's great. It's about leaving some sort of a plan that you can get to. If you're a young marketer, get part of the conversation, get onto Kantar's site, educate yourself, and also surf the world. You know what I mean? There's certain things that you could do now that you could practically not do. You couldn't afford it, the average person, both in time and money, to travel around. So do that. And then just as we're heading towards the end, Gordon, Corin, just one last question from our side. I'm interested in the whole SVOD on demand video. We've all found ourselves in that way. I think for me personally, I've left linear TV a lot sooner than I thought. Yeah. You know, I got into two screens a few years ago, at least, not a year ago, which I also at the time said, it's not really for me. I'm not a two screen. I watch TV, then I work on my computer. So two screening. And then a while ago, we spoke with Ryan Williams, remember, from Sir Kinnicall. And the big issue with Hollywood is release windows. Their big thing was release to big screen a window, and then it goes into iTunes. And those days are gone. And we saw that with Disney and Mulan.
Yeah,
and
I mean, they didn't have a blockbuster launch.
Let's just talk a little bit, you know, as we're heading towards the end, just your take in the research report, the future of watching on demand.
Yeah, I think there's no company more grateful for 2020 than Disney Plus. Who, you know, in their business plan, they were hoping to get 60 to 90 million people by 2024. They got, I think they were on the latest count, they were on 84 million customers already. And it just became an opportunity where people, they need to get away from the pressures they're facing. And so streaming has just become an everyday part of life. I mean, if you just listen to the language, people are saying, I'm going home to Showmax tonight, I'm going home to Netflix tonight. That's part of life. But what we're starting to see from the SVOD perspective is that people only still have that budget, limited budget, what they're going to spend on content. So we're seeing a lot more move towards aggregators and alliances and people coming together to bring a benefit to one another. So, you know, they're not going to sign up for seven different services, but you're going to see the relationships, as you can see now with MultiChoice. They've put Netflix onto the decoder. They can have the benefit of the billing system and the customer base that MultiChoice has. So I think a partnership mindset is one that I would encourage any young marketer to have, because when it comes to e-commerce, who's your partner from a courier perspective? to every facet of marketing is, don't think you have to do it all yourself. Who else can you build on the back of another successful brand to be more successful yourself? So looking for, it's a different mindset that we used to have in the past.
Well, I think that's a great way to wrap it up. And I think partnership and integrated vertical partnerships all the way across the board and horizontal for that matter as well is the way to go. And Corin, thanks for coming in today. I really appreciate it. Doc, you and I are in a long-term relationship, so I'll see you next week.
Sorry, Gordon, you just caught me a little bit.
It's no snoozing in the studio.
I was
not at home. This is not Zoom. I can watch you nodding off there.
Corin, thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And those insights. And again, you know, get onto Kantar's site. Those resources are available. Educate yourself. Be part of the discussion. And Gordon, yeah, until next week. We'll catch you then.
Ciao.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views and certainly will respond. And hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc. And it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, at Mzanzi Media. And I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo. And we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.